Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
By the established comedy conventions of their era, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, better known as Bob and Ray, were true game changers. Their parodies, broadcasting about broadcasting, existed in their own special universe, and their own complete absence of show business slickness set them apart from the very institution they were mocking, yet were still part of. They resisted being called comedians and never considered themselves an act. In the new book, Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons, David Pollack traces the origins and development of the unique sensibility that defined their radio and television series and their body of work. Again, the name of the book, Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons. It's a great pleasure to welcome David Pollack to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Joe.
The book is an awful lot of fun. It tells of two great broadcasting personalities. How did these two people find each other?
They both found themselves working at a station in Boston, WHDH, whose programming was sort of dictated by the direction of their transmitter signal. The owner of the station had a radio station that in Boston didn't go anywhere west, but had a great signal to the east out over the Atlantic. And so we hit upon this idea of broadcasting the fish prices to local fishermen out at sea so they could either return if the prices were high or stay out until they if they were a little low. And so this everybody at this station had to broadcast fish prices along with a number of other duties, disc jockey shows, newscasts, and Bob and Ray both ended up working there, and Ray was doing the news on Bob's early morning radio, early morning disc jockey show, and would afterwards the two would just sort of kibitz, and it sort of caught on, and they started ad-libbing little riffs about the only thing they really knew, which was broadcasting. So it was. That was sort of the controlling principle, radio about radio, and spoofs of popular shows of the day.
What was it about the two of them that brought you to this subject? You've been a longtime comedy writer. What was it about these two men that you wanted to explore?
Well, I had hit upon them just by chance when I was in the eighth grade, and they were just so different. Unlike other comedians of the day, Jack Benny and Burns and Allen and Bob Hope, they were just totally different. They didn't have a studio audience. They were just two guys in a room. Both could play straight or be funny or do any number of voices. The lure was sort of in the relationship and how they played off each other. It was just very appealing. You kind of wanted to learn their secret handshake.
And what was interesting about them and how they worked was that there was not, as you said, there wasn't a set, okay, you're going to be the straight man, I'll be the funny guy. Because that would always go back and forth.
All they ever wanted to be was announcers. And growing up, they came of age at the same time radio did, so they were sort of steeped in that. And they were different, as you point out, from standard comedy teams. They weren't cut-ups or joke tellers. They were just sort of two level-headed guys riding herd over a bunch of characters. There was no phony affability or showbiz affectation about them. In fact, on the air, they barely even had heightened on-air personas. The show was never about them as individuals. It was sort of about this goofy world they observed. They were sort of celebrity surrogates, as I point out in the book. They were in show business, but not of it.
And when you think of that, of going into it that way, it seems like the perfect place for a broadcaster to be, right? It's almost like a journalistic motto of, okay, I will sort of cover show business, but I'm not going to be a part of it.
I guess that's true. I mean, they loved it, and it was all they ever wanted to do, but they never really saw themselves, I think, as comedians. In fact, all they ever wanted to be were announcers. You know, in the 30s, network announcers had this sort of golden-throated image. You know, they were sort of these smooth-sounding voices, tuxedo-wearing stars, really, at a certain level.
When they came to write the material, when they came to work on the material, how would they segment it? How would they work together? How would they work apart?
You're talking about off the air, creating the material.
Yes.
There was very little of it. That's the amazing thing about them. They, as I mentioned earlier, they started by just kibitzing after Ray Goulding's newscast on Bob's disc jockey show. And the only thing they knew was mocking various radio shows at the time. So they started doing these little parodies. But they were of the moment. They didn't pretend to be faithful to the original programs at all. They were just sort of spontaneous riffs, fanciful tangents. With all of their other duties at the station, newscasts and those fish reports I mentioned and remote broadcasts, there was no time to write material or even steal it. So it was all spontaneous. A lot of it was very sloppy. As Ray says in the book, we had the opportunity to be bad, but they, over time, sort of refined it, discarded things that didn't work, and kept with those that did. And then later, when they got to the network and at NBC and were on like 17 and a half hours a week, they ultimately had writers. And so they combined their spontaneous bits with written sketches by comedy writers.
For them, what would they consider the big break to be? Because as you mentioned, they had great success in local radio, and then of course great success on network, both radio and television. Is there something they considered to be the big break?
Well, I think it would be when they went from WHDH to NBC, but that had been preceded by, in the late 40s, what were called the Paley Raids, when Bill Paley, the head of CBS, hit upon this tax scheme where big-name performers could, in effect, become their own corporations and save a lot of money in taxes. Big stars like first Amos and Andy, and then Jack Benny, Red Skelton, Bing Crosby, and Burns and Allen all left NBC and went to CBS. So NBC at that time, and we're talking about around the very late 40s and early 50s, were looking for comedy talent. And Bob and Ray fit into that nicely. Because they didn't require a studio audience. They didn't require, all they needed was a studio and, two microphones.
And with this great success, obviously, came the radio shows, the television shows that I mentioned, motion picture roles, performances at Carnegie Hall, a Broadway show that was very popular. So they were together, as you note in the book, for 43 years, and throughout that time were quite successful.
Yeah, yeah.
They never really had a
downturn.
Were.
They were always doing something. I mean, they managed to have summer homes, and they both were big family guys. Between them, they had 11 children.
But they never really had like a downturn. They were always working and doing projects, creating new characters and creating new material.
Well, they had a commercial company that they created with a long running campaign for Peel's Beer, a regional beer throughout the East, I'm sure in the very area that that you're reaching right now. And that was so successful, they formed a company and did major advertising campaigns for like General Electric, General Motors, and a lot of major products. So that business was always going, and it kept going right up till the end of their careers. And so while they were not always with a radio series or a television series, sometimes there would be a few years in between even. There was always the income from that commercial operation. And then, as you mentioned, there was the play and a couple of movie roles and the Carnegie Hall concerts.
It goes without saying, but it's a large part of the book and a large part of their career, that the characters were such a part of it. And I'm hoping you can talk a little bit about the creation and the longevity of those characters, probably the most famous being Wally Ballou.
Right. Wally Ballou was a bumbling reporter, always played by Bob Elliott. And the name came about simply because Bob's mother worked at Ballou Hall, which was the main administration building at Tufts University. And it was just something they hit upon. They just stumbled into. Bob always played it with a sort of adenoid kind of tinge to the voice. And Wally, as I say in the book, you know, he arrived at every story that he covered with both his adenoids and his ego, and neither ever went into remission.
Obviously, Ray Goulding passed away several years ago. Bob Elliott is still with us, and has a bit of a comedy dynasty on his hands.
Yeah, he does. He's sort of the patriarch of. I don't know that he would call it a dynasty, but he, you know, his son Chris is. Frequently on the Letterman show and has a number of books out, very funny books, and has been in movies and is filming one, in fact, at the moment. And then Chris's daughter, Abby, was on Saturday Night Live for a while, and I believe she's on a new show with a comedian named Amy Schumer.
So it is certainly that there's a lot that can be said about the Bob and Ray legacy and the timelessness of their work, of listening to those tapes and listening to that material and how it stands up now.
Yeah, well, the funny part about that is that everything they did was mocking some show that had been on radio or television. And for example, one of their most popular was a spoof called Mary Backstage Noble Wife, which was based on a soap opera that was on forever on CBS and NBC, too, for a while, called Mary Noble Backstage Wife. Well, it went off years ago. It went off. It had been off for like 30 years, and they were still doing the satire of it. So generations came along who had no idea what the original was. But that bit, like all of theirs, were just funny in their own right. They were just self-contained. And because they never pretended to be that faithful to the originals, as I mentioned before, you didn't have to know what had preceded them. You didn't have to know what program it was based on. You could listen to them and not even know they were satires.
It is, it's a wonderful book. It's Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons, and it has one of the funniest forewords I think I've ever read by Dave Letterman, so congratulations on getting that.
Thank you.
The name of the book, again, Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons. It's published by Applause. David Pollack, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank
Pleasure
you.
Pleasure being on your show.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Bob and Ray, Keener Than Most Persons. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.